Essential pest control leaves bugs belly up.
With science.
You mean you don't use a shoe?
No, we use the latest in technology and innovation to eliminate bugs, termites, weeds, and more.
No spray cans and lighters?
None of that. Only solutions that target insect biology, using chemistry to help protect the environment, people, and their pets.
Huh. Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up. Call 886-3029 or visit essentialpest.com.
Hey, little buddy, I got some good news. What is it, Skipper? The professor's fixed the radio. Turn it on, Skipper.
To get your car fixed properly, just call Perfection Auto Works, 323-8650.
Give him a call, Professor. He'll get us off this island.
And I'll get to go back and finish my love scene with Troy Donahue.
You know, lovey, I can't wait to get to the bank. Let me try another station, little buddy.
Iran's first ever direct assault on Israel.
Angel assault.
Homeless encampment is growing.
Skipper, that's terrible news.
Putin's threat to NATO countries.
Professor, I got a hold of Perfection Auto Works, and he's going to come out as soon as he can.
Cancel that call, Professor. We're staying right here. I guess that cancels our trip to Paris.
You might not be shipwrecked on a desert island, but if you and your car need to be rescued, Perfection Auto Works is here to help. 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.
This is Ed Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. Now that the new year has started, and so have your New Year's resolutions, make sure that one of those resolutions is to get your financial house in order. Now's the time to reach out to your advisor and schedule an annual review. If you don't have an advisor or want a second opinion, call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911 or WilkinsonWealthMGMT.com.
Welcome back to the 2 o'clock hour of Inside Track. This is Bruce Ash. I'm in Studio Coronado, overlooking the USS Vinson. Eb's coming to you live from the mothership of the Bustos Media Juggernaut in the Tucson Iron and Metal Studios. Thanks for hanging out with us, listening to us on your car radio or smartphone while running around town or doing chores around the house. Before we hear from our special guest, Pima County Attorney Candidate Mike Jetty, this half hour brought to you by Wilkinson Wealth Management, Essential Pest, Perfection Auto Works, and Tucson Iron and Metal Retail. Eb and I support each of these locally owned, family-run companies. We think you should also. Eb and I also want to thank Fox News contributor and retired U.S. Navy Captain Bob Wells for a unbelievable show that he hosted last Saturday.
He hit it out of the park.
Didn't he? Yeah. And actually, the show now is out in a lot of different platforms between Bob as well as one of his guests, Max Mazlish. He did that great show last Saturday when Eb and I were both away. His guest, Kurt Leipold, Art DeCueto, who, you know, it took
Art
Wells
Del
to get
Cueto.
Art. No, it's DeCueto.
Is it DeCueto?
Yeah.
I am wrong.
For once.
Oh, my God.
It doesn't happen often. And we've been trying to get Art on the show for a long, long time. And, you know, we weren't able to do it, but Bob Wells, being the amazing guy that he is, got him with us. And Max Mazlish, they're all great. Bob will be back with us in July with another great show planned for you. So please be sure to stay tuned. Eb and I are pleased to welcome our next guest, Pima County Attorney Candidate Mike Jetty. This is Mike's second visit to Inside Track. Look, for anybody who hasn't been paying attention, we have a law and order problem in Tucson and greater Pima County, largely because of the radical policies of County Attorney Laura Conover, who has adopted George Soros' style of justice, which is creating a crisis here. Mike's professional journey, it's Mike Jetty's professional journey, is marked by a commitment to justice and a diverse array of judicial experiences. And I'm not going to be able to get to all of them here, but beginning his legal career as a deputy county attorney in Santa Cruz County, Jetty then rose to the position of assistant attorney general in the Arizona AG's office, eventually leading to his significant role as a U.S. assistant attorney. His expertise covers a wide gamut of legal areas, handling high-stakes cases involving white-collar crimes, public corruption, and violent offenses such as murder, sexual assault, human trafficking, and robbery. Mike's proficiency extends to tackling property crimes, criminal appeals and other complex issues. By contrast, the current Pima County attorney has been negligent in her duties to uphold law and order. The office and community she swore an oath to has been used by her as a social experiment with horrific results and caused our community great harm. Low bail, no bail releases, no charges and misdemeanor pleas, and a gutting of her department, which has rendered the once efficient county attorney's office, formerly run by dedicated elected officials such as Barbara LaWall and Steve Neely, a shell of its former self. That will not happen with Mike Jetty on the job. The current county attorney is a representative of the furthest edge of the leftist legal dogma that has spread from places like San Francisco, Los Angeles, Chicago, Atlanta, and New York City right here into Pima County with disastrous results. It's time for a county attorney who will protect the community that he takes an oath to protect and bring back safety to our community. And I think that man is Mike Jetty. Our next county attorney will be elected July 30th in the primary because there are no Republicans running for county attorney. This election has enormous impact for the safety of our community. Mike Jetty has been endorsed by the Tucson Crime Coalition, and perhaps later in his interview here, we'll talk about some of the other really amazing people who have who have endorsed him. And while Mike, I wouldn't suggest that you show my name as endorsing you because some people may get a little offended by that, but I endorsed Mike Jetty for county attorney, and I don't make it a regular practice to endorse Democrats. So Mike, I've laid out the problems with law and justice we faced over the past 3.5 years in our county. Talk about what the first 100 days of a Mike Jetty-managed Pima County Attorney's Office would accomplish.
Well, thank you, Bruce, and thank you, Eb, for the opportunity. One, I want to say happy Memorial Day weekend for everyone. And for
thank
some
you.
People who know, I know Eb served in the military. My father was over 20 years Marine Corps, and so I come from
damn Marine fine Corps. Man, hoorah.
Yeah, so I come from a Marine Corps family, and so I understand the dedication and the commitment that families make as a whole for their service members and family members to be in the military. My dad served 4 years in Vietnam, and so he is a, to me, to this day, still a true hero. So, and the second thing I want to do is I want to send out an appreciation for you, Bruce and Eb, for having me on, even though I'm a Democrat taking the stage, because as Pima County Attorney, I'm Pima County Attorney for everyone in the community. I think everyone has a right and deserves the opportunity to meet with me, speak with me, regardless of where you're at on the political spectrum. And so I appreciate the opportunity to get on the radio with you all. So my first, to answer your question, Bruce, my first 100 days is one, probably the easiest thing is to walk in there with a different leadership mentality. My job as Pima County Attorney is to enforce the law justly and with equity, and which is not happening now. And so my job when I first come in there is to make sure that we adhere to those fundamental policies that the Pima County Attorney is instructed to uphold, which is justice, keeping a community safe, and making sure that people are held accountable. And when there's rehab needed for individuals, we give them the necessary services for that. But rehab starts with accountability, Bruce. And I think we all can agree with that we need people who are held accountable. We do need to give helping hands. We got that. No one needs to be having an argument over the empathy that we all have for our fellow neighbors. However, there still needs to be some accountability. So within the first 100 days, I'm hoping to bring back some of the talent. I've got a staff. I got an ad hoc staff I've already created who, if I'm lucky enough, knock on wood, to prevail in the primary, who will be coming in to assist me and to train, to hire, and mentor prosecutors in the office, bring back victim advocates who will be the vanguard of making sure that victims aren't lost, who are communicated with and understand the legal process of their cases as they go through this process. So my first 100 days is going to be wrapped around creating a better image of what Pima County can be. And I've always liked to use the phrase Pima strong. So that's my first 100 days, Bruce. And so it's going to be a lot of human resources and bringing back confidence and from the public into this office.
We have a caller waiting, but before I turn you over to Eb and our caller, we met earlier this past week, Mike, and you really educated me on something important, and that was how your office would work as partners with law enforcement, giving them the support they needed at the scenes of serious and violent crimes that have been committed in our community. If you become our next county attorney, talk about your different approach to crime scene management would be a return to the policies of LaWall and Neely's administrations.
Yeah, so this is nothing new for me. I mean, just so you know, Bruce and Eb is, if elected, I'd be the first candidate to ever hold the office of Pima County Attorney with a master's in business. So I understand how to functionally run this office. And one of the things I want to do is you look back at the history of this office, and one of the best things that Barbara LaWall did was made sure a prosecutor was on scene for homicides, make sure a prosecutor was on scene for violent offenses. Because when a prosecutor is on scene assisting law enforcement with evidence collection and giving advice on search warrants and arrests, you've got a much stronger case as that case moves through the criminal system. So you want your prosecutors on scene because we're partners. Law enforcement and prosecution, we're partners. Now, sometimes the partnership frays because we control the charging. The county attorney's office controls the charging. We control whether or not the defendant is charged, what the charges are, and what the exposure for that defendant is going to be. So sometimes that frays against the public law enforcement officials' wants. But, you know, as the people of Pima County can rest assured, I've been doing this job for 17 years, and one of the best things we can do is work collaboratively with our law enforcement partners, because you build stronger cases. And then they also tell me, too, is, you know, these are individuals, some individuals need help, and law enforcement officers, these are not jackboot thugs here. We're talking about people who really care about their community and care about their neighborhoods, and they want people to get assistance and help too, because they don't want to see them again. They want people to get treated, get the services they needed, because they don't want to have to deal with them again. They want to give the best opportunity possible. We want to give them what I like to call a trampoline, Bruce. We want to give them a trampoline to catapult them into a better way of living. So,
Mike, thank you. We've got a caller. Charles, you have a question?
Mike, I heard you this morning on an earlier show at 8 o'clock. I don't know if that was a recorded program, if that was live.
My voice is LawMat. My voice is live and beautiful, I thought, right, Charles?
And I heard you say something that really piqued my interest in terms of prohibited possessors. And one of the things I believe I heard you say, please confirm or deny, was that in the event there's a prohibited possessor in the house, that all the guns must be removed from that house, including people who legally own guns. Is that what you said?
No, so you're talking about a Q&A that I had with Sherry about a prohibited possessor can't be in constructive ownership of a gun. So there has to be a case-by-case analysis of how that gun and who controls that gun. So we have a created, you're in this gray area, Charles, where if you have a prohibited possessor, someone who's out of custody, who is not allowed to have a weapon, who is living in a home where he has access to a weapon, we've got ourselves a gray area because he's prohibited possessor, so he cannot possess the gun. So we've got ourselves a case-by-case analysis of how safe and secure is that gun being stored? Who has access to that gun? So there's a lot of things that go into that equation, Charles. That's a case by case analysis on that. Am I charging? Okay. Am I taking guns away from people? Absolutely not, Charles. However, I need to assess the situation, because a prohibited possessor is, by its very nature, a prohibited possessor. You can't own or constructively possess a gun.
Right. In other words, there can't be one loose in the house with a prohibited possessor. And I completely understand and even agree with that. My question is, are you going to attempt to disarm somebody who isn't a prohibited possessor, who possesses a gun in the home with a prohibited possessor, provided they take precautions that the prohibited possessor not handle it?
No, you have a lawful right to own a gun, Charles. I mean, the owner of the gun has a lawful right in the Second Amendment to have that gun. So my job here is not to disarm that individual and take that gun away from him. But like I told you, it's going to be a case-by-case analysis on that.
So somebody would need to have a safe that the prohibited possessor didn't have the key to in order to legitimately possess the gun because of the circumstance. That's kind of what you're saying.
Or store the guns at a friend's house or something like that, because then you are
abridging their rights.
No, I'm saying
not to have the gun in the house, that's a deprivation of civil rights under the color of law.
No, they have the. I'm not saying I'm not forcing them to do that. I'm Charles. I'm saying there's a bunch of different ways the owner of the gun can take care of the situation without having the stink here. So all I'm saying to you, Charles, is there's different things that the owner of the gun can do. I'm not forcing the owner to do anything, but we need to look at that case and see if that prohibited possessor is in constructive ownership or control of that weapon. He's not allowed right. to. So.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and it's part of the problem. What we're not doing now is we are not enforcing our laws that we have, and as a result, prohibited possessors are continuing to repeat offend. That's a big part of what's not going on right now that you're talking about changing.
I think we agree. Maybe our language is just crossing in the midnight air here, Charles. I think we kind of agree on the same issue.
Kind of.
Yeah, Charles, love language is the firearm.
What?
Your love language is the firearm.
No, it's actually not. I care about people, not things. You know, you love people and use things. You don't love things and use people. And I think Mike's heart is in the right place, especially with the story that he told at the close about applying reason to justice. By the same token, somebody who says, well, there's a prohibited possessor in the house, so no guns can be there, which is not what he's saying. But if someone were saying that, it would be of grave concern to me if they did say it. And frankly, if someone said that, I would prefer Laura Conover, bad as she is.
Let's move on. Charles, thanks for the call. Bill, you're live on KBOI.
Yeah, good afternoon. I'm not sure how much detail you can get into on the specifics, but from what I've read in the media regarding the gentleman that was accused and convicted of the Pioneer Fire, based on just the reporting I've seen, the current occupant of the county attorney's office has basically tried to have it both ways when it comes to the disposition of that gentleman's case, and in so doing has basically left Pima County in a serious world of hurt when it comes to liability. Down the road, we're talking potentially millions of taxpayer dollars that are going to have to go into, resolving that case one way or another. And the current occupant has basically served it up on a silver platter. From my perspective, it sounds like the woman has basically, abrogated her responsibility as an officer in Pima County. Could you speak to that, sir?
Yes, to the knowledge I've got about it, that's a great question. So here's the concerning part for me as, a career prosecutor, is she ran a campaign where she commented on this ongoing litigation as she was running for county attorney, which may or may not have assisted her in securing the county attorney's seat for the Democratic Party. She can do whatever she wants as a candidate, but when the moment she became the county attorney, she was conflicted off of dealing with anything with the case on the civil side. Well, she ignored that conflict and got herself involved with working out civil agreements with the plaintiff attorney for Mr. Lewis Taylor. That becomes a big, huge issue, and I don't know all the details of it. However, I do know she even drafted up a motion to exonerate Lewis Taylor and then flip-flopped on that decision to exonerate. So the question I have for everyone, including the two hosts here, is, and this is more of a rhetorical question, is if you believe Lewis Taylor is innocent, you need to exonerate him. If you don't believe he's innocent, then why are you drafting drafting a motion to exonerate, and then why are you communicating with victims, and why are you communicating with the public that he is an innocent individual? So you can't have your cake and eat it too. Can't have your cake and eat it too, is the phrase I think you used. So we've got ourselves a county attorney who's, because of her inexperience, threw herself into this mix, this quagmire, and this quagmire now she is now a witness on a trial which starts July 8th. And so our county attorney now is going to be on the witness stand on a trial that starts July 8th.
Mm. An awful situation for the county to be in.
Follow up, Bill?
And to that point, is she not, as just an attorney, regardless of whether she's county attorney or not, hasn't she placed herself in a no-win situation as an attorney? Forget county attorney, that is going to cause repercussions for Pima County for years to come because of what she has done, not just running for the office 4 years ago, but now as the person that is supposed to wield that authority as county attorney in Pima County.
I hope so. I hope she put herself in peril for the county attorney race in July. And on top of that, I do think that the state bar came down and put her in a diversion program because of this conduct. I don't know the details of the diversion program, but the Lewis Taylor case is the case that precipitated the decision by the state bar to put her in a diversion program. And so this case has become, unfortunately, now our attention, this shows the inexperience of the current county attorney. This shows the inexperience of an attorney who has never been in trial, the inexperience of an attorney who's never been a prosecutor, the inexperience of an attorney who's never led an office and had to deal with some difficult decisions. So this is the difference between me and Ms. Conover. We agree on the Democratic side on some big Democratic issues. I'm sure the listeners here are probably going to put me on a flagpole and hand me out to dry, but I'm a pro-choice Democrat, and that's why I always appreciate Eb and Bruce for having me on this radio show. But you guys all deserve an opportunity to meet the other candidate here, and I look at rule of law as a little bit different than Ms. Conover. I look at it as I want accountability. I want rehabilitation for people who deserve it, who want it, who need it. I'm going to give people the wraparound services, but I still need to hold violent offenders accountable. If you break into a house or you commit an assault on someone, I need to hold you somewhat accountable. And if you need some services in the meantime, we'll give you some services. So,
Bill, thanks for calling. Mike, you and Mrs. Conover showed up for a debate in Green Valley recently. What was your takeaway from that?
Disappointed a bit. And the reason...
How so?
I'll just give you one example of it. I believe I said... there's an error on my part, too, on this. I think I said that she moved 304 felony domestic violence cases back to misdemeanor. And that's important for everyone to know, because domestic violence cases are one of the most dangerous cases around, because this is partner-on-partner crime, and it often escalates and continues to escalate goes from verbal all the way up to violent crime, including murder. And so there were 304 felony domestic violence cases that were pushed back down to misdemeanors. A misdemeanor system where the city attorney's office is already overexposed to a lot of cases. I was wrong, 304. She called me a liar, and she was right. It was not 304, Eb.
How much was it?
424.
Oh, okay.
Yikes. And so the issue to me is when you have a county attorney who does not play well with the facts of the case, does not play well with the facts of an issue, it's troublesome. What you need to do is, and say we have 304, you need to tell the audience and tell the public, why are you making that decision to push those cases back down to misdemeanor? Because those are felony cases. Felony cases, when there's substantial injury, Eb and Bruce, there is a reason why they're felony versus misdemeanor. There's a weapon involved, there's substantial injury involved, there's some issue that makes them a felony, and you push them down to misdemeanor, you get less supervision, less pretrial services, less services, period, when you move them into misdemeanor, because now you've devalued the case, and now your victims are now more exposed.
Well, let me ask you a question on that. Couples fighting loud enough for neighbors to call the cops. The cops show up. The only thing the couple was doing was yelling not violently, yelling at each other. Does somebody still go to jail?
No, I think that's like a noise disturbance.
I don't know.
That's like a noise disturbance. Okay. I mean, keep it down. I mean, okay. everyone has aggressive. I mean, my wife and I watch Oregon versus Oregon State football. And I'm an Oregon fan and she's an Oregon State fan. So sometimes we'll argue loudly about which team is better. So,
but there's never blood.
Never blood. But you know, I don't want to jest, but there's all these cases are case by case. I mean, you can't do a general rule of thumb right on these things. And so, but when you have a noise disturbance, it's different than having a domestic violence. Domestic violence means there's an assault on someone or a threatened assault on someone, which is serious enough for a cop to intervene. Cops, we need to have trained. We need to have specialists go with the officers when they go to a domestic violence call who can assess the situation. There's assessments that need to be done on domestic violence cases. Like I said, domestic violence is one of the most dangerous classification of cases we've got, because these cases escalate in a second, and victims oftentimes will change back because they're stuck in this relationship of good and evil, of love, and so you've got this really very complicated dynamic involved in domestic violence cases.
So why does she push those cases down to misdemeanors?
She doesn't have the staff. Well, I can't speculate. I can't hypothesize, but I can. I'm going to do it right now. But I think you've got very little staff. She started off with, I think under Ms. LaWall, there's roughly 60 plus felony prosecutors. And I think today we're in the mid 20s. And so you've lost about 30, high 30s to 40 prosecutors in that felony unit. And if you don't have the bodies to prosecute, Eb, what do you do with the cases? You move them off. You move them off. You give plea deals. You devalue them to a misdemeanor case. You do something because you don't have the bodies for it. And so that's the issue. I was in court the other day, and this is, and burglary is a big thing for me because my house was burglarized some time ago, but there was an individual with four burglaries, four different residential burglaries, and he was all of them were offered class six opens. So the listener knows what a class six open is, an opportunity to get a misdemeanor out of four residential burglaries. So breaking into four different homes, the castles, the place where you want safety, this individual has the opportunity to get four misdemeanors.
Wow. We are at the bottom of the hour. We've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Mike Jetty, candidate for Pima County Attorney. No
Essential Pest living. Control leaves bugs belly up with science.
You mean you don't use a shoe?
No, we use the latest in technology and innovation to eliminate bugs, termites, weeds, and more.
No spray cans and lighters?
None of that. Only solutions that target insect biology, using chemistry to help protect the environment, people, and their pets.
Huh. Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up. Call 886-3029 or visit EssentialPest.com.
When you're fooling.
Sit down. I want to ask you a few questions. Is your name Farker?
Yes.
Are you a mill nurse?
Yes.
Are you a pothead?
No.
Did you take the car to Perfection Auto Works like I asked you to?
Yes.
No, no, you didn't. Now, where's the cat?
Hey, is this Jack Burns?
Yes.
Hey, this is Jinxie Automotive. Listen, I got some good news and I got some bad news. The good news, we found the cat.
Mr. Jinx.
The bad news, well, he's wrapped around a fan belt.
Fucker, get in here!
Hey, let me give you some advice. You know when someone recommends Perfection Auto Works, well, you should listen to them and avoid a catastrophe. From belts, hoses, and even tires, 323-8650 and PerfectionAutoWorks.com.
When you're fooling.
Customers come first at Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus.
My main goal is to make everything easy for the customer, whether every decision I make in terms of business is, will this make sense for the customer? And is this make it easier for the customer to come and look at material, how the yard is organized, what material we cover, what material we offer, anything like that.
Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. Call 209-1579. Stop by the yard, 701 East 36th Street. Open Monday through Saturday.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. Some advisors say they do everything. Take that with a grain of salt. In fact, take it with a whole salt mine. We specialize in guiding you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. We refer you to other services so that we have no conflicts of interest. Reach us at 777-1911. That's 777-1911 or WilkinsonWealthMGMT.com.
Welcome back to Inside Track. We've got Mike Jetty, candidate for Pima County Attorney. We've also got a caller, Chris. Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, is Bruce with you?
God, I hope so.
Oh, Bruce, Bruce I love is you, in, buddy. Bruce is in studio. This is Windows XP.
Nice for you to call in. Thanks, Chris. Good to hear from you.
Yes. I have more of a statement. I'm a lowly window cleaner, commercial window cleaner in Tucson, so I'm ground level. And I really feel that with the current situation with the homeless and this rampant crime, literally on the streets, I mean, right there. In fact, I just watched people gut a dumpster at First and Fort Lowell at the check cashing. They just literally went in, opened the gate, threw all the garbage on the parking lot to get cardboard boxes to make signs. Now, I feel that it's not only the crime, it's this blatant disregard for any authority that these people have, that they just have free reign. We'll call it a blank check just to do whatever the hell they want on the streets And here we are following the rules, getting squeezed just by federal government, state government, county government. And it's becoming very disheartening. And at some point, something's got to give. And in my lowly opinion, things are going to get really ugly. So, sir, I would hope that you would, much like a cancer treatment, you would start at the bottom level and work your way up. I mean, Conover, she's just a distraction. You need to get down home. I mean, there is a policy of the police called broken window, where you do not accept vandalism and all of that. That's in the rear view. We're now smoking fentanyl in public, destroying bus stops, breaking. I mean, it's just lawlessness. Literally, this city is compared to Gotham.
Okay, Mike.
Well, I think that's a statement, but you know, I do feel that, because I live downtown Tucson and I know what Chris is going through, because I see it all the time, and it's exacerbating for me too. That's why I'm running for Pima County Attorney. I came back from Pakistan, and this is one of the reasons why I'm running, is because I'm going to take my experience and hopefully change this, because small things do lead into big things, and if you just allow this conduct to continue. Now,
a little bit of the broken window theory?
A little bit. And so a lot of times broken windows get stuck with the stop and frisk. The broken window theory, I agree with. Small things can lead into big things. And I want to make sure that we make officer contact with people, because officer contact with people does change behavior. I do want to give a lot of people who are addicted, they do a lot of stupid things when they're addicted. I want to give them the treatment. We all do. We want to give them the treatment and wraparound services. We want to give them mental health support services they deserve. So we want to get that. And there's plenty of people out here in non-government organizations that will assist the county attorney's office to get that done. So that's one thing, Chris, I'm 100% on board with you, and that's what we're going to be doing.
Bruce.
We have to take a hard out here at 42 after, Mike. Let's talk about victims' rights versus criminal rights. Chris, I think, was speaking for a lot of people who believe that as victims, they don't get as many rights as criminals do. Talk about that. We only have about 2 minutes.
Well, I've always been a victim prosecutor, and so I do know that we have a victim bill of rights here, and we do have a pretty robust victim rights. We should have a pretty robust victim advocacy group. It's also been decimated recently at the Pima County Attorney's Office, but victims have rights. Victims have rights to their case being adjudicated justly and equitably and quickly. They have a right to consult with their prosecutor. They have a right to see their cases go through the process, and if it's declined, they have a right to know why it was declined. Too many times recently, we've got victims who are voicing their frustration that the county attorney's office is ignoring these bill of rights. They're not consulting with the victims. They're not giving the services that victims need. And so this is a big, huge problem. So one of the issues is the optic is you have a defense attorney who is more concerned with the defendant's rights. We all are. We all have a constitution. We want to give the defendant their constitutionally afforded rights. We do. No one's doubting that. But the victims have a right to get different services, which are victim advocate services. They get services to assist with any issues of damages or victimization. They get services of consulting with the prosecutor. They get advice and consulting with the prosecutor and victim office, or the prosecution office. So what I'm saying is they have a lot of services here which aren't being given to victims in Pima County, which is unfortunate.
So Mike, we're gonna have to call it for today. How do our listeners find out more about you and also support your campaign and help you with some dollars?
So I appreciate that. So we're not going to, me and this listener group is probably not going to agree on a lot of political issues, but fortunately for us, the role of the prosecutor should be apolitical. We should be about the rule of law and about giving services to people who need them and accountability to people who need accountability. So you can go to my website, learn more about me at mikejetty.com. Feel free to donate. There's two ways to donate, through ActBlue or DonorBox. And send me an email. I respond to the majority of my emails, unless it's for a yard sign, someone else will respond, but I will respond to most of the emails. So get involved, because this, even though there's two Democrats running, there is a difference between me and Ms. Conover, a stark difference. And so if you can't vote in the primary, your dollars, your investment in this campaign is your vote. And so treat it as an investment, treat it as something that you want to be active in the community. I represent everyone in Pima County, not just Democrats, not just independents, but Republicans too. And so my job here is to be on these shows to make myself, expose myself to sometimes very difficult questions that we may not agree eye to eye. However, that's my job, is to put myself out here so you guys can have a question and answer session with me. So I appreciate it.
Bruce, in the remaining... Hang on. There we go. I'm back. In the remaining 1 minute and 30 seconds, I got to tell you, Bruce, I spent probably an hour and a half one-on-one with Mike in my office, going back and forth over a number of issues. There is so much more that we agree on than we don't agree on, and I think that's important. Now, are there differences? Absolutely. But I'm very impressed with Mike willing to come into the lion's den and talk and be straightforward, as we both were. Very cordial. It was never heated. It was vigorous. And I truly enjoyed that. So, Mike, I want to thank you so much for that. And, yeah, I'll support you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the support, and I appreciate being on the radio show. And sometimes I get criticized for being on such shows, but my job here is to get the message out to everyone in Pima County, including Democrats and Republicans. I'm in a Democratic primary. That's just how the nature of the beast goes. But I hope everyone supports me. I take any contribution from anyone.
Well, the airwaves are free to both Democrats as well as Republicans to be listening to this show, and I hope there are a bunch of Democrats. I think we do actually have a fairly significant number of Democrats who listen to the show. Mike's website is www.mikejettie.com, and that's spelled J-E-T-T-E. This is a good man that wants great things for our community. So we will speak with you again soon, and we're going to, before we close today, we're going to talk to Carrie McQuiston, who is from Oregon. She's the author of a book from Black Lion Publishing called The Government We Deserve. Have we got Carrie on the line yet?
Carrie's on the line.
All right. Carrie?
Hi, I'm here.
Great to have you on Inside Track. Thanks for joining us today. I understand you're celebrating a birthday.
Somebody ratted me out, did they?
Somebody ratted you out. And so, look, Eb and I have voices that suck, so we're not going to sing happy birthday to you.
You.
But we do wish you a happy birthday, sweet 16, and all that good stuff. So
thank you.
We know that Scott McMahon... we know about Scott McMahon in his Substack podcast. He pointed out a wild story here in southern Arizona recently. Scott's been looking into the recent RNC elections in Oregon, I understand. Talk about that.
Yes, he did do a podcast on the March 16th National Committeewoman race from here in the ORP in Oregon. And boy, that was a debacle. I think we're probably in the middle of one of the biggest election integrity scandals in the state right now.
And so what is the outcome from that election?
So there is no outcome yet. Just by way of background, Tracy Honnell had finished out the term of the former national committeewoman here who had moved out of state. And so this was her first election for a new term, and she drew two competitors, Helen Heller and Regina Jackson. And when it came down to the count, that's when all of the problems started. We had 126 people credentialed, 126 ballots went out, 126 ballots were initially counted in the counting room. She did not get 50% plus one. She did not win on the first ballot, but she was declared the winner. Second and third counts, a ballot went missing, and that's where the whole problem started.
That's a huge problem. I mean, we've had, I think, honest mistakes that have been made in the past here in Arizona. We have a much larger election for state party chairman and for the RNC members. The entire state committee votes, and you know, there's give or take 1,600 or so state committee men and women who participate in those votes, but in a group of 123 or 26, I should say, that is a demonstrable sort of a problem.
It was a big problem, and there were objections by the observers for the other two candidates back in the counting room. And it was still called, actually. This was the bizarre thing, is Tracy Honnell's observer, a gal named Margie, had actually started taking over the duties of the head teller, which you cannot do. She was writing on the tally sheets. She was crossing numbers out. She was saying what the count needed to be. She was handling the ballots. She was responsible for dividing the ballots up into piles where not one of the observers could ever see all of the ballots being counted at once. And so in the end, you had three different tallies. Helen Heller's vote went up and down by as much as three during this. So nothing was settled, but she declared Tracy the winner, went out and informed the acting chair. Our chair was not there for that meeting, and she was declared the winner. At that point, the acting chair said, okay, this missing ballot was an abstention. Why was it an abstention? No one in the counting room saw an abstention. The room was asked. No one said they abstained. But that's how it was ruled. And then they said, okay, well, there was only 125 ballots cast, so she won.
Wow.
Well, she didn't. So I've just listed off probably six different rules that were violated in our special election rules. Big problem.
And what was the margin of her victory?
That's very unclear at this point. What they presented was a one ballot, or well, we don't know, because the second round of voting was actually cut off. And that was the problem. It was required by our rules to go into a second round, at which point the other half of the room would have probably come together against Tracy. It was a toss-up at that point. But then you start looking at eyewitness testimony from the counting room. There was actually a second ballot that wasn't missing, but had, for some reason, the vote had been crossed out and Tracy's name penciled in. So that makes two ballots right there that are a problem. And, you know, it's really not a matter of how many. It's the fact that every single vote should count and those elections should be clean.
And I believe by what you just said a few moments ago, you were actually in the counting room and saw this happening.
I was not in the counting room. I was out in the audience. So I saw everything happening from outside the counting room. And I saw the observers come and take the mic, one of the observers. And at that point, a lot of the observer statements came out afterwards because they were shut down at the mic. One of the observers came to the mic and got in there in the middle of a 45-minute chaos session. I mean, it just broke loose for 45 minutes with people making motions and trying to object to this. And he was cut off. He started saying what the problems were and essentially got shouted down by Tracy Honnell's supporters in the audience. And there was another lady who was a county chair who stepped up, and she made a motion. You know, I heard it with my own ears. She made a motion to have a revote. And the chair, in conjunction with the parliamentarian and Tracy's observer, who was also acting as rules committee chair, if you can believe that, decided to turn that vote into a 2/3 majority vote to change the rules. That's not what that lady moved. It's not what was seconded. But that's what the body ended up voting on. And of course they voted down a rules change. And so that was twisted into saying, oh, see, the body just supported my win. And that is not what happened at all. So it's gone on in the challenge, and the process still is not done.
And what has the RNC said about the election?
There was one step taken, and that was to bring it before their contest committee, their essential complaints committee. It's an 11-person committee. They came back after a hearing, and at that hearing, Tracy did not present one single witness statement from the counting room. Her defense was basically people had been picking on her for a year and that people had presented false testimony. So she called everyone who submitted a witness statement a liar. The committee admitted during the meeting that they really hadn't read any of the petitioner's exhibits. And that was reflected in a recommendation, not a ruling, to go ahead and seat her. So that's caused a problem there. We've got to go back and revisit that now. I'm not a petitioner. I'm just kind of observing and reporting on this. But that has continued the process on, because within their recommendation, the RNC has stated that the petitioner didn't submit evidence and that no one complained in the middle of the meeting as things were happening, when clearly we have a 45-minute brouhaha documented.
Yeah. So in Arizona, we've had some inter-party squabbles, some harsh words said, and a chairman resigning, and lots of turnover of volunteers. Oregon has had its own issues also, hasn't it, with respect to the running of the state party? Talk about that.
It's been pretty tumultuous over the last couple of years. I think we've had 4 different chairs come in and out in the last 2 or 3 years, so it's been a revolving door. At this point, we have leadership been in place for a little over a year, and these are folks who have had no previous party experience. You know, most of them had never been to a central committee before, and suddenly we have a chair and vice chair in that capacity. We have county chairs the same way, and we're hurting, honestly. The party is very divided. A lot of people with no knowledge of party history who want people with party history gone. Apparently, if you've got 2 or 3 years of knowledge under your belt, you're a rhino. It doesn't quite work that way. You need a mix of, you know, fresh blood and party knowledge to make things work well, and we don't have that right now.
And in terms of, hang on here one second. A little technical glitch. In terms of Oregon, it's maybe not so likely that Oregon will turn a 4 Republican candidate in the presidential, but there are some congressional seats that are in question. How might the chaos at the state party in Oregon, similar to here in Arizona, how might the state party in Oregon not be able to support congressional candidates in very winnable districts for Republicans?
You know, I think with all of the infighting and the chaos and the lack of experience, the party has probably been rendered just neutralized for this election cycle. And I know beyond the pass-through monies that are currently sitting in ORP's bank account, those are earmarked for CD5, Lori Chavez Dramer's congressional campaign. There's nothing else that ORP can take out of that or is supposed to take out of that account. That's earmarked for her. But in our last meeting, it was acknowledged that the party was $10,000 in the red, and then we found out that there's another debt of about $20,000 in the red. So the party's in the hole. And when you don't have any money to spend on these big campaigns, they're not going to be able to help. We've got another race in CD4 that's a very viable race. We have Monique Despain running against the incumbent, and that race is flippable. So it's very disappointing to see this happening in our party right now.
And am I remembering right? Is this an even year for a gubernatorial election as well?
No, that's in 2 years.
Okay. All right. I couldn't remember for sure. Well, certainly these two seats, one is a hold, correct? And the other would be a pickup?
Yes, exactly. And the one that's a hold needs everyone to fight for that. I mean, it was a slim margin last time. She's been attacked by our own side and the Democrats. And so that's going to be a tough challenge.
So talk, and that candidate's name is that you just referred
Lori Chavez,
to?
Lori Chavez Dramer.
So in Lori's case, on what basis is she being criticized by Republicans? Is that she, quote unquote, is voting with Democrats on budget bills and so on, similar to some of the nonsense that's going on here in Tucson?
Yeah, that's the criticism I heard. They agree with her probably 80-85% of the time, and so she has become the enemy. And I disagree with that. You know, I think in a district like she's in, she probably actually is representing her people pretty well. And, you know, I go back to what Reagan said, that she's not a traitor. You know, that's someone who's better than the opposition. You know, her opponent going in is a far left progressive nut job. Do we want that, or do we want someone that we agree with 80 or 85% of the time? That's the choice.
So you've written a book, The Government We Deserve.
Yes.
As somebody who is an observer of the political scene in Oregon, and for that matter across the country, the government that we deserve is somewhat difficult at times to achieve because of our own mess ups and some of our own infighting. How do you think we resolve that?
I can tell you one thing that I'm working on right now. We have started a brand new nonprofit, the Oregon Conservative Caucus, and we are going to be focused on, you know, filling in the gap, getting out the vote, targeting voter registration, these very basic things in Oregon that are not being done right now. Because some of our House seats, for example, in the state were lost by less than 200 votes. If we had just had a functional party in place, those could have been flipped.
So I've been doing political work now for about 16 or 17 years. It's not about glamour most of the time. It's about blocking and tackling.
Yes.
When people are carrying on the way they're carrying on in Oregon or here in Arizona, what's the chance that blocking and tackling is going to be effective to pick up legislative House seats as well as a hold and maybe even optimistically a pickup in a congressional? I mean, can you do it? I mean, is there any possibility of success if people don't come together?
You know, just because the party apparatus itself is having issues right now doesn't mean that everyone outside of that apparatus isn't coming together. I mean, we have complementary Republican groups like the Republican Women's Clubs across the state that are very strong. I mean, these are solid, tough, conservative ladies. And I know in my home county, we probably have six times the money in our bank account, you know, compared to the local Republicans. We can take that and help get Republicans elected.
And Kara, it's my observation here in Pima County, as well as across the state, it's not the men's groups who get the work done. Oh, men may pound, campaign signs, right? Pardon? Yeah.
They'll pound the table,
right? And they'll pound on campaign signs, putting them in the ground. But it's really the women in our party who have done most of the work, isn't it?
It depends on where you are. We need our men. You know, we don't go into that toxic masculinity narrative. You know, we value the mix. So we have quite a bunch of associate members who are men. So.
Well, and we've got about a minute and 30 seconds left.
All right. Well, Kara, thanks very much for checking in with us, and I appreciate you and everything that you do. Just is there a website for your conservative caucus in Oregon that you might want to share with us?
You can go to OregonConservativeCaucus.com, but it's just a landing page right now. We're going to launch the whole thing complete with active clubs right after the presidential convention in Milwaukee.
Well, Kara, thanks very much for coming and spending a few minutes with us at the end of our show today. Happy birthday to you. I hope that this is a wonderful year filled with happiness and a great presidential victory.
And that's going to...
Thank you.
Thank you, Kara. That's going to do it for today. Check out our Facebook X accounts for the latest news and our views on the news. All of our Inside Track episodes are available at Apple Podcasts and the KVOI website. We've got another great show planned for you next week when Bruce chats with Michael Paradis on his new Eisenhower book in honor of both observance of D-Day landing and former Texas Congressman Louie Gohmert. Until next time, next Saturday, this is Eb Wilkinson.
And Bruce Ash.
Wishing you all a contemplative and thoughtful Memorial Day weekend. Be sure to join us again in 166 hours.
I did it, Mom.
Please, I beg you, don't try to fix it yourself. Remember what happened last time.
911, it's my husband.
Don't worry, it's a simple electrical problem.
I think the positive thing goes onto the negative, and the negative goes onto the positive. Or is it vice versa?
I think this belt will fit. All I just need to do is stretch it.
Wow, I can't wait to tell Mary that I fixed this myself.
Well, let's see. It's supposed to take transmission fluid, but I'm thinking antifreeze might do the trick.
Don't worry about it. What do you think? I am stupid? I got this.
Well, I wonder if this schematic for the Ford Taurus will work for a Volkswagen.
Don't do it your way. Do it the Perfection Auto Works way. 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.
I did it my...
Essential pest control leaves bugs belly up with science.
You mean you don't use a shoe?
No, we use the latest in technology and innovation to eliminate bugs, termites, weeds, and more.
No spray cans and lighters?
None of that. Only solutions that target insect biology, using chemistry to help protect the environment, people, and their pets.
Huh. Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up. Call 886-3029 or visit EssentialPest.com.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. Now that the new year has started, and so have your New Year's resolutions, make sure that one of those resolutions is to get your financial house in order. Now's the time to reach out to your advisor and schedule an annual review. If you don't have an advisor or want a second opinion, call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911 or WilkinsonWealthMGMT.com.